y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s-loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of domestic violence. Listener discretion is advised.
In 2007, 17-year-old Kara Kopetsky walked out of her high school and was never seen again. Everyone close to Kara felt that her abusive ex-boyfriend was behind her disappearance. However, investigators were unable to firmly tie him to Kara's disappearance. In 2016, 21-year-old Jessica Runyons also disappeared in a nearby Missouri town. The man she was last seen with? Kara's ex-boyfriend, Kyler Yust. It wasn't until one of Yust's close family members confessed to his involvement that investigators were able to finally start to piece together what had happened to both Kara and Jessica and finally bring justice and closure to them and their families.
Hey, you guys, welcome to Killer Queens. If you've never been here before, we want to give you just a little information about how the show is set up and what it's meant to accomplish. If you have been here before, welcome back. You can just use that handy skip ahead feature here if you want to.
We want to give a message to friends and family of the victims. We know that there may be someone involved in the case who might listen one day, and we want you to know that our intention is to only bring awareness to this case. And while we do use personal stories in some instances and our own humor in order to tell the story in a way that listeners can relate, we have the utmost respect for victims and their families.
We created Killer Queens to be a place where we can have open discussions about cases just like you would with friends. We are not investigators. We use information that is available to the public, such as documentaries, case files, and media coverage. Using this information, we intend to tell the story of what happened in each case that we cover. Now, will you agree with our interpretations or conclusions of each case? Well, heck no.
We each approach cases from different perspectives, life experiences, and beliefs that we already have in place. And sometimes these differences are slight, yet they can be wide enough to cause divide and upset some of those listening. We do our best to present the facts as we find them in our research, but we do bring our own perspectives to the case. We understand that you will too. We want you to know that this is a safe space to discuss differences and opinions in a civilized manner. Our style may not be your personal preference, and if that's the case, we know you'll be able to find one of the many other shows out there to tell the story the way you want to hear it. We can be grown-ups about it if you can.
Now, if we are your cup of tea and you want even more KQ, you can join our Patreon and get access to our entire catalog of episodes ad-free and access to bonus episodes too. And I'll give you just a little hint if you're an ad skipper, but you still want the deals that we have from our sponsors each week, you can scroll down to the show notes and see what coupons we have available for you right down there.
But you didn't hear from us.
That's a pro tip, but I'll deny ever sharing it.
Right. So all that being said, let's get into the story.
All right. We should have done a trigger warning for you're just going to be real mad.
Yeah.
This is one of those cases that you're just going to be real mad. We do, before we jump into the case, want to give a hey girl thanks to Madison for writing this one up. Hey girl, thanks. And we've had a few requests for this one.
Yes. We want to thank Megan, Alana Coons, Megan Thompson, Danielle Ward, and Kristen Bartles.
Thank you guys. Let's jump right in, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that.
Kara Elise Kopetsky was born on February 17th, 1990 in Frankfurt, Germany to Rhonda and Michael Kopetsky. She was the couple's only child and she grew up with a carefree attitude. After moving back to the United States, Kara's parents eventually divorced. And then Rhonda ended up marrying a man named Jim Beckford. They also have a child together that's Kara's younger half-brother, Thomas. The family lived in Belton, Missouri, which was a working-class town, and that's just under a half hour south of Kansas City, Missouri. Kara attended Belton High School and had a group of friends that she was incredibly loyal to. One of Kara's close friends, Jennifer, who'd known Kara since middle school, described her friend as happy, energetic, and someone who could always see the positive side of things. This positive energy radiated to the people around her. She was a great friend, and Jennifer said that Kara was always there for her, absolutely no matter what was going on. And she later told interviewers that their favorite song was Chasing Cars by Snow Patrol. And they would actually call each other when it came on the radio and they would laugh about it. I mean, and this is, you know, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. You couldn't pick what you wanted to listen to on Spotify, y'all.
Yes. And I did pick that song to listen to on Spotify last night because it brought back all of them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we saw Snow Patrol live and they must have done this song 15 times.
I think they did it at least three because the first time they did it, it was their instruments weren't all the way in tune or something. Mm-hmm. And so then they did it again. And then I have no idea why they did it for the other time.
Yeah, they just kept saying they weren't getting it right. And so they wanted to get it right because, I mean, that's their biggest hit, right? It's not my favorite Snow Patrol song, but it's their biggest hit.
Yes.
Yeah. I do love some Snow Patrol.
Me too.
And they spent a lot of their free time hanging out at each other's houses and, I mean, just being teenage girls. Mike Miller, one of Kara's teachers from Belton High School, thought she was a very special girl. And he said, quote, "She was a little ornery, a little funny, my type of kid. But I will always remember she had one of those grins that when she smiled, it just went ear to ear." And he actually said it was hard to get on to her about anything because she had that beautiful smile. Another friend said that if it weren't for Kara, she wouldn't be where she was today. Kara had befriended her at church and convinced her to keep coming back. And she credits Kara as the reason that she's a Christian today. And she truly cared about the people she loved and never had a problem with letting them know. Hmm. And she's 17, you guys.
Yeah. She made a huge impact in such a short amount of time.
And her family was really, I mean, I watched interviews with her mom, you know, on the news, because this is something that was covered on the news a lot. And her mom credited her faith over and over as like the reason that she was able to get through her daughter disappearing and like all of these things. So they were a really, I would say, spiritual family, I guess.
Yeah.
And it seemed like they kind of imparted that on people around them. And they were just really, really positive people.
Absolutely. On the morning of Friday, May 4th, 2007, Kara gave her mom a hug and a kiss. And she told her that she loved her and that she'd see her after school. She called her mom from school and asked her to wash her work uniform so she could come home after school, she could change, and then go to work. Kara worked part-time at a local chicken restaurant called Popeyes. Now, I'm wondering, is this the same Popeyes that I know? Love that chicken Popeyes.
Yeah, yes. That one. Yeah.
Right there. We were right there. Because I would get, I mean, Popeyes is pretty big. Chain restaurant, right? I mean,
yeah, we have them here.
Yeah,
for sure.
But anyway, so to Rhonda's surprise, Kara never came home after school and she never showed up to work. And so Rhonda started calling Kara's cell phone, but there was no answer. And Rhonda got concerned because her daughter didn't return any of her phone calls. And that was extremely unlike her. She always called her mom back. So her parents quickly went into panic mode. Local police were notified by Kara's parents that they were really concerned that something had happened to their daughter. Police, in classic police fashion, were like, oh, she'd probably run away.
She's just 17. She'll be back. She went to hang out with friends. She'll come back when she's ready to come home.
Yeah. But, yeah, go
she's
ahead.
She's not allowed to do that. She's a child. Mm-hmm. She's a child. Like, why are we not considering 17-year-old children when they're still children?
I don't know.
And she had very, very firm plans. If she was the kind of kid who often would run away and disappear for a few days, I could see where the police would be like, well, this is in her history, even though we've seen that happen where there are kids who have a history of running away and the parents know that there's something wrong this time.
Right.
You know, and we don't listen to that. But even if she had, like, or you have to look into that kind of stuff. And they didn't. They just said, she probably ran away. But she was supposed to go to work that night. She had called her mom and said, "Wash my uniform, please. I've got to go to work tonight." And if you called her work, they would not tell you. She didn't show up on a regular basis. It's very unlike her.
Well, and I think that it's so important to take into account that family members, parents, whoever, they know their kids or their loved ones, I think, well enough to know that they're not going to, if it's out of character for them, it's out of character for them.
Like, yeah. And if you're going to tell a parent, well, you're just freaking out over nothing, and then you call their job and they say, she's never done that before. Like, you know, come on. But they didn't. And there's a lot of phone calls they didn't make. We'll get into that.
Yeah, let's just get ready. So regardless of the police's initial instincts, they still had a minor missing. So they started asking questions at the last place she'd been seen, which was Belton High School. Friends confirmed that Kara had made it to school that day, and she was talking to them in the morning, asking if anybody wanted to skip school. Her friends decided not to, but Kara, it didn't bother her. She still did it. Surveillance video at the high school showed Kara leaving school at 9:21 a.m., and there didn't appear to be anybody with her. Rhonda was immediately suspicious of Kara's 19-year-old boyfriend, Kyler Yust. Now, guys, listen, it's not his fault that his name is Kyler, but it is his parents' fault because they named him Kyler, which is whatever, but it's spelled K-Y-L-R.
Yeah, when I first started looking into this, I was like, somebody made a typo. Yeah, because I was like, you know, this newspaper just didn't print it correctly. I was like, his name must be Kyle. Why is there no like ER or AR? I mean, I get you can spell your kid's name however you want to. I mean, shit, my name's Torella. I'm not coming for anybody if you got a different kind of name.
This is a stones throwing in glass houses type of situation.
Yes, 100%. This guy is the biggest douchebag I think that has ever walked the earth. And then just his name being Kyler is just like with
K-Y-L-R. Kyler. And I think that made me feel a lot better about, because I'm not trying to roast anybody that doesn't deserve to be roasted. And like, you know, I'm not free from being roasted as well. I get it. But he's a piece of trashes. And I think that that's the important part here. That's what I'm trying to drive
home.
Dirty
brown water trash. Yeah.
Yes. I'm sure if I met another Kyler that was spelled the same way, but it was a totally awesome guy, I'd be like, oh, I like it. It's not bad. But what a cool this guy name. Really just grinds my gears. Yes. So Kara and Kyler had started dating in 2006, but they were no longer together. Their relationship had become very toxic, with Kara telling people that Kyler was physically and emotionally abusive. On April 21st, which is just 2 weeks before Kara had gone missing, Yust showed up unexpectedly at Kara's friend Amy's house. Kara left Amy's house with Yust and returned almost an hour later, and she reportedly had a swollen lip and, quote, choke marks around her neck. And then Kyler then continuously called Kara's cell phone, but Kara did not pick up. So less than a week later, on April 28th, Kyler showed up at Kara's work just as she was leaving.
Of course.
Uh-huh.
Because he knew she'd be walking to her car by herself.
Right. Yes. He convinced her to get into his truck, where he drove around and physically assaulted her before dropping her off in the next city over. What is wrong with this person?
He couldn't even bring her back to her car? I mean, my God. You find your way home.
Exactly. It's just so shitty to do to somebody. And for some reason, something that's coming to mind is like, I've seen this video on Instagram where it's like, siblings be like, and the sister's in the room just minding her own business, and the brother comes in and he just like knocks something off of the desk and then turns the light off and just leaves the door open. And it's like, why?
Yeah, exactly. Why? Yeah.
And obviously this is much, much worse, but it's like, but why? Like, why do you got to do that? Yeah. Just bring her back.
And
my
then
God.
He wonders why she won't get back together with him.
Exactly.
I wonder why, dude.
Right? 2 days later, on April 30th, Kara and her mother went to the police station so Kara could file a restraining order against Kyler. In the report, she checked the boxes indicating that Kyler had caused physical and emotional harm to her as well as stalking her. Under what act she was referring to, Kara wrote, quote, Saturday, 4/28, kidnapped, restrained. 1 month ago, choked me. December 6th, had knife in hand and said, quote, I'm going to slit your motherfucking throat. March 7th, wouldn't let me out of my home.
Let's not take it seriously, though.
Right, yeah. Under the space where it asked why the person posed a risk to the person filing the report, Kara wrote, quote, because I'm unsure of what he'll do next, because the abuse has gotten worse over time. On May 1st, Kyler was served with a restraining order and explicitly was told that he was not to have any contact with Kara. And 3 days later, Kara disappeared.
Why was he not arrested for assault?
I don't know.
She had physical marks on her.
Mm-hmm.
This was not the first time it had happened. Other people could corroborate this. Why was he not arrested?
And I get that. I mean, she's filling out a form to get this restraining order, right? But it feels like adding insult to injury or something that you have to write down. She wrote down everything, all the acts that she had experienced from Kyler. And then underneath it, it's like, why do you think this guy poses a risk to you? It's like, did you see above?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
Yeah, like, I don't know. And maybe it's just standard form and whatever, but that really pissed me off. Mm-hmm. I was like,
yeah. And she, I mean, she's 17 years old.
Okay, but did you die though? Like,
exactly. She's 17 years old and she says, because the abuse has gotten worse over time. And that's exactly what happens. And it continues to escalate and it can absolutely escalate to murder.
Especially if the survivor, whatever word you want to use, victim of the domestic abuse, decides, I can't do this anymore. I'm leaving. We've talked about it how many times. It's the scariest time.
It's the most dangerous time. And he has threatened to kill her before.
Mm-hmm. I will slit your motherfucking throat.
Uh-huh.
And he's holding a knife.
Uh-huh.
It's not like you say, like, in passing, like, oh my God, I could kill that person right now. Like, mm-hmm. That's not the same. This is a threat.
And him showing up at her work when he knows damn well, and maybe he didn't know her schedule for that day, but he knew she worked there. He could have very well sat outside and waited for her to come out.
Absolutely.
You know, but that is stalking. That mm-hmm. is stalking. Sitting outside and watching somebody or showing up to their work when you know they're going to be alone and vulnerable. That is stalking. And it's fucking serious.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's not taken very seriously, like, okay, well, because, I mean, again, I know I've told the story so many times, but when I had to take a restraining order out against my ex, because same stuff, he was threatening and he was following me and he was showing up at my work when I was getting off. And I ended up having to have, like, my boss ended up having to have a man walk me out to my car every night when I left because we didn't know when he'd be there and, like, all this stuff. He got a job where I worked. They fired him when they found out what was going on, all this stuff. But I got the restraining order and he didn't care. He still kept showing up everywhere. That did not mm-hmm. bother him whatsoever. And when I called and said, he's here, you know, he's not supposed to be here. They're like, well, then you need to leave. I'm like, what? Like, I'm just trying to go to church. How come he gets to stay and I have to leave? He knows he's not supposed to be here if I'm here. He's the one that did something wrong, whatever. And I said, like, and they were like, well, by the time we get there, he'll probably already be gone. There's no reason to send somebody out. I'm like, but shouldn't he be arrested because he's violating it? And I was like, I don't understand why I have this then. I don't understand what the point of this is. And they literally said to me, well, that way, if he kills you, he'll get in more trouble because it's documented. I guess she didn't say if he kills you, if he finally does something to you, he'll get in more trouble because it's documented.
Oh, that's why I got it. Okay. Well, that makes sense. It makes me feel better. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand why police officers don't take this kind of stuff more seriously. And we have talked about there are some times where they do. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that in every case, but the vast majority of it is they're like, well,
mm-hmm.
you leave.
Yeah.
This is now your problem.
Uh-huh. And let me tell you, if somebody threatens to kill you, it doesn't matter, or threatens to harm you in some way. It doesn't matter if they never actually go through with it. If they're telling you that they're dangerous, believe them.
Mm-hmm.
Believe them, because, and Kara did, and she did all the right things. And yeah, maybe she ended up getting into a car with him again, but she's 17. She cares about this person and she also trusts him. And he is the type of person, and all abusers are this way, they gradually become abusive. So that you kind of brush the abuse off at first and you're like, but he's usually really nice to me. Maybe he's just having a bad day. And then you start to believe that you did something to deserve it, or you did something to provoke it. And like all these things, it is such a gradual thing. It is a grooming process. It is done that way on purpose so that you will continue. And sometimes people are scared to, she may have been afraid to not get in the car with them. Like, we don't know, but I don't know. I guess I'm just like, it makes me really angry. And just from personal experience, I just want to say that, like, if you're in a situation like this and you are hoping it will get better, I want you to know that the typical way that it's going to play out is that it will continue to escalate and it's going to get worse. Like, please keep yourself safe. It's just really sad. And like the thing about Kyler Yeust was he was super charming. And now seeing him in news reports, you know, where like anchors are talking to him, he comes off very full of himself and very kind of combative and stuff like that. He just seems like a douchebag. But I can see where he may, you know, he could be very charming with people. But they also described him as having a dark side. They said that he had violent tendencies. And unfortunately, Kara was sometimes on the receiving end of this. On May the 6th, police interviewed him. And he told him that he was with his grandfather at a nursing home in Kansas City on the day that Kara disappeared, and he had no involvement in her disappearance. And do you know what the police said? Well, clearly they followed up on that, right? Make sure he was telling the truth.
We wish.
They were like, okay, if he says he was there, he was there. Sounds right to me.
Yeah. We don't need to look into this any further. We don't need to verify that or anything.
They never followed up. Not once. Made no phone calls, never tried to like see if surveillance video caught him on a camera, nothing. An attendant at a local convenience store told police that he saw Kara and Kyler together on the day that she disappeared around 11 or 11:30 at his store. There were reportedly problems following up with this worker. Police never got surveillance video footage either. And in fact, they lost track of this person altogether. Lost his ass.
So it makes me wonder if the police in this case had a clear understanding of their jobs. Did they know that they were supposed to do that kind of stuff?
Maybe not. Maybe they didn't know they were supposed to follow up on alibis.
Or, you know, interview witnesses or get surveillance footage. Especially, it really, really shrinks my hat when surveillance video is like, oh, the cameras weren't working, or oh we already taped over it, or blah, yeah, blah, blah. But if they actually had it and they just didn't get it,
come on.
I'm fixing to throw these hands. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I know.
At everything around me, not at anybody. I'm just going to start knocking shit over.
Become a little kitty cat.
Boop.
Yeah.
And then I'll use my litter box.
Kyler told police that his last contact with Kara was on May 3rd, the day before she disappeared. And he says Kara called him on the 4th, but he did not answer. And then when he tried to call her back, Kara just didn't pick up. So, yeah, she tried to call him, but he never talked to her. But the police do check his phone records.
Surprising.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't match his story. So Kara did call him and he had called her back. But she answered. They spoke. They talked for 20 minutes. And that's at 9:20 a.m., which is the time that Kara is seen on surveillance footage leaving the school. But he told them that it had been, you know, later in the day. They never talked, whatever. So when the police tell him what they'd found on his phone records, he... this tells you everything you need to know about Kyler Yeust, I feel like. He stuck to his story. No, it didn't.
I don't understand being caught in a bold-faced lie and then being like, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I have proof. Mm-hmm. I caught you.
Exactly. And so you can see how that's the type of personality that he has. That's the kind of person who will gaslight somebody, who will literally make you question your own reality in a relationship. No, I didn't. I didn't talk to her.
He's a sociopath.
Mm-hmm. I'm fucking looking at it, dude. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. It doesn't faze him. Yeah.
Mm-mm.
If I lied to the police and they found out, my God, I would pass out from just sheer panic.
Yeah, me too.
They'd be like, well, actually, I checked his.
Soul has, Torella has left the chat. Like,
oh my gosh. Like, I would be like devastated. He doesn't care. So he sticks to the story. He says he had not talked to her on the phone that day. He did admit to the incident where he had essentially kidnapped her in April, but he still denied any involvement in her disappearance.
I mean, I kidnapped her once, but like, it, you know,
but like, not
it doesn't
that
mean that
day.
I did it this last time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Over a month ago. And he even in a news interview, like a reporter is talking to him and they're like, do you know where Kara is? Did you kidnap Kara? Did you do something to Kara? And he was like, dude, no. The only reason they're even calling me a suspect, this is what they told me, because of prior incidences. They don't have anything that says I kidnapped her that day. All they had is like when I kidnapped her before. It doesn't even go together. Like,
that's a pattern of behavior.
Tori, I was thinking the same thing. We've been covering I Am a Stalker. I guess by the time this comes out, we'll be well done with that on the Patreon. But we've been covering that show, and the very first episode is called Pattern of Behavior. And I'm telling you, when I was reading everything about this case, I'm like, pattern of behavior, pattern of behavior. My God, like, it's very frustrating. So after this, a witness comes forward at some point later to authorities to tell them that he had spoken to Kara on the day that she went missing. And this witness was a mutual friend of Kyler, Yust, and Kara. And he said Kara had called him that morning. She asked if she and Kyler could come hang out at his place, because remember, she was skipping school. And he said, I'm busy. Sorry, it's not going to work. So Kara didn't come over. However, Kyler Yust did show up to his house around 12:30 p.m. to smoke a cigarette alone. And the friend said that later that day, Kyler called him very, very upset, begging him not to tell anyone that he'd been with Kara that day. And he told him it was because he didn't want to get in trouble for violating the restraining order. And so this friend started trying to call Kara after this, but his calls went straight to voicemail. Obviously, he was never able to get in touch with her. All right, so now we're to May 9th. Kara's paycheck at Popeyes is available for her to pick up. She does not go get it. A 17-year-old who doesn't get their paycheck, big name deal. Especially considering she's never no-called, no-showed before. It's not in her character to miss work and, you know, whatever. But I mean, when I was 17, I couldn't put $3 worth of gas in my tank if I didn't have a damn paycheck. And that's all I was going to put in there.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you that.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, every penny counts. Like,
And it's not like this is her dream job where she's working for fun. I mean, I've had the best times working those little part-time jobs. It's the people and, you know, but the work, it's not like you enjoy cleaning fried chicken grease up and stuff. You know, like, she's working hard for something, and that is
exactly
to get paid.
Yeah.
So
yeah. It just, that's a huge red flag. And that just, you know, is another indication to everybody around her that she had not disappeared by choice, because she would need money to survive if she was just like disappearing for a few days or weeks or whatever. And there's also still no activity on her social media or bank accounts. And the police end up finding her debit card in her locker at school, which they didn't check for like weeks or months. But
what were they doing? I don't get it. But, and again, I mean, some people might think like, oh, who cares about social media? But that is big for a teenager. Especially, those were MySpace days. Like,
holy
we were
shit.
Always oh getting on MySpace.
Every like thought, I used it like a Zanga, like a journal. And certainly you were going to change your song or your background every few days, depending on what kind of mood you were in.
Top eight? Mm-hmm. I mean, come on.
Yeah, my boyfriend pissed me off since you've been gone. Kelly Clarkson, boom, up there. Every time.
And he is at the very bottom of the top eight. Still on there, but he has lost his first place.
Not happy with you. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a big deal. I mean, So on July 23rd, police go to talk to Kyler Yust again. And he told them that when he talked to Kara on the phone on May 3rd, they had an argument. And he said, this is so frustrating to me. He had accused Kara of, quote, planning to spend the weekend partying and running around on him. You're not together anymore, sir. What do you mean running around on you?
not being faithful to your ex-boyfriend.
Tell me you are a manipulative, controlling sociopath without telling me that you're a manipulative, controlling sociopath.
Yep.
She denied this, of course. They got in an argument, but he was like, but I certainly didn't talk to her on the phone the day before. I don't know what you've heard, but that's wrong. I don't. You obviously are unable to read. You read that report wrong. Somebody fudged it. I don't know what happened, but I didn't talk to her that day.
Right.
And I don't know where she is. So months pass. This turns into years and there's no sign of Kara. She never contacted her family. She never contacted her friends. And even though it was difficult, Kara's family tried to hold on to hope. There were no solid leads coming in. The community refused to let the case fade away, though. They held rallies, they held vigils, they passed out flyers, they put on events. They participated in everything they could to keep Kara's face in the public eye. Her family did interviews, and they made sure that nobody forgot that they were still looking for Kara.
Ugh. It's so bittersweet because it's so sweet that they obviously cared so much for her. And I wouldn't expect her family to be like, oh, well. But right. I mean, the community itself, too, everybody was like, no, we're not going to forget about this. But it's just so sad that this had to happen. It's just.
Yeah. Well, and when we say no solid leads came in, I guess that's more according to the police. Because we're about to get into some stuff here.
Yeah. In 2008, Kyler reportedly confessed while he was drunk to his new girlfriend, Caitlin Ferris, that he had killed Kara. Caitlin said that Kyler asked her if she knew about him and Kara, and he then told her that he'd put Kara in his car and she was never seen again. Can you imagine your new boyfriend being like, remember that missing girl? That was me. Like, I can't imagine what was going through her mind.
Absolutely.
In 2009, Kyler, again drunk, supposedly told one of his former roommates that he had, quote, snapped and killed Kara because she, quote, refused to love him. On April 26th of 2010, that roommate called Belton police and told them what Kyler had confessed to him. And in late of 2010, Kyler's then ex-girlfriend, Caitlin Ferris, had contacted the FBI, or was contacted by the FBI, excuse me. She told them that they were still on good terms, and so investigators asked her if she'd be willing to wear a wire and meet with Kyler. Caitlin agreed and traveled from North Carolina to Missouri, where she'd arranged a meeting with Kyler. During the audio and video recording of that meeting, and Kyler has no idea that he's being recorded at this time, right? They had a lot of small talk. Caitlin asked him what his raven tattoo around his neck meant. And Kyler replied that it was representative of fingers around the neck of death.
Wow, brag much?
It's a massive neck tattoo like this. And apparently it means fingers around your neck.
Fingers around death, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Caitlin asked Kyler if they could use a Ouija board to contact Kara and see if she was happy. And Caitlin tried to convince Kyler that he could tell her what had happened, that he could trust her. And Kyler said that he could only trust her as far as he could throw her. And she told him that she'd feel better about he'd feel better about getting it off of his chest. And Kyler said that he wished he'd never told Caitlin about this entire thing. So sorry, I have it.
Also, this is like, this is really brave of her to do, because if she believes that he's killed Kara, because
she's putting herself in the line of fire. Yes.
Absolutely. That's really brave.
Mm-hmm. Can't even imagine. Caitlin had picked up Kyler in her car and they were heading to the spot where they were going to use the Ouija board. And Kyler is heard saying, quote, we're going to the death spot of the girlfriend I killed. Is that not a confession?
That's what I don't understand, because their whole thing is they want to get a confession out of him. And then they're like, well, we didn't get anything we could use.
Why not? It's because, is it because he didn't say where he dumped her? They didn't have a body to...
That's what I don't get, because if all they're looking for is the confession, yeah,
maybe they just got it, right?
Yeah, maybe they were just looking for where they could recover her remains, but that certainly would tie him to the case much, much more strongly than him just saying, I killed her. But
this is 4 years after she's gone missing, so...
Mm-hmm.
she hasn't shown up. She hasn't turned up anywhere alive.
No. And he even says to Caitlin, like, you're really turned on because I killed this girl, aren't you? Like, he says stuff like that. And it's like, mm-hmm. What? Oh, he's yucky. Yeah.
No. Ugh. He called himself a killer and said that he wasn't good enough for anyone because he had killed someone. And Kyler starts telling Caitlin that she'll probably never hear from him again because he's going to end his own life. So the two, they refocus on the Ouija board. And Caitlin said that she thought Kara seemed like a cool girl. And Kyler told her that Kara was awesome and that she and Kara would have really liked each other. This pisses me off. You don't get to talk about her that way. Mm-mm-mm. You don't get to talk about her that way.
Yeah, you guys would have totally gotten along.
Why can't we? Oh, because you killed her.
You killed her. Yeah.
Right. Oh, that's yeah. Why. Okay. Ugh. Once they finally reached the place where they were going to use the Ouija board, Caitlin asked Kyler if he was excited to hear what Kara had to say. And he responded that he wasn't. And he said, quote, do you understand this is the biggest fuck up of my entire life? And reportedly, Caitlin tried to get Kyler to tell her where Kara was, but he wouldn't. In August of 2011, one of Kyler's ex-girlfriends came to the police to file a restraining order against him. Pattern of behavior.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what did he do to her?
Right. She told investigators that he had choked her several times and that he'd admitted to killing girlfriends in the past and that he would kill her too. And she also said that he'd hurt and killed animals in front of her. In September, Kyler pled guilty to assault and animal abuse charges, and he was sentenced to 2 years of probation and required to attend a batterer prevention program.
I'm sorry. 2 years of probation?
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Let that sink in.
Okay. Probably won't do
Go
it again.
Go ahead. Prep the window. Get it prepped, ready. Go ahead.
Yeah. This is, you need, everything has to go out the window here.
Mm-hmm.
Everything
Even
has
my
to
own
go
self.
Out the window.
Yes.
Yeah.
On June 5th, 2012, a witness contacted the Belton police to inform them that earlier that year, Kyler admitted to him that he'd pick Kara up from school on the day that she disappeared because she'd had an argument with the teacher. And he told the witness that he and Kara had gotten into a physical fight and he choked her to death before placing her body in the woods.
How many times do you have to hear the same story to believe it? To look into don't even take him at his word. Fucking look into it.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, well, we haven't had any solid leads yet. So how many people have contacted them about Kyler?
He's telling literally everybody. He's bragging about it. And he's mm-hmm. telling every girl that he becomes in a relationship with, you yeah. have the audacity to leave me, I'll kill you like I killed Kara.
Mm-hmm. It's just, it's so incredibly ridiculous to me that, because a lot of times what it's like, people can keep a secret as long as somebody keeps their mouth shut. Kyler is a prime example of how he cannot keep his mouth shut. Thank God. Yeah. But even with that, it still doesn't help.
Yeah.
For forever. It's like.
Exactly.
What else do you want?
He spends a decade walking around being like, I killed Kara. I killed Kara. I killed Kara. I killed Kara.
Yeah. It's like he's wearing a t-shirt that says, ask me about killing my ex-girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
He'll tell you.
Yeah.
In 2013, Kyler was sentenced to 3 years and 9 months in prison for drug trafficking charges. And because, again, couldn't shut his pie hole, a cellmate of Kyler said that Kyler had asked him to get him an alibi because he'd killed Kara and gotten rid of her body. So now a total of at least 7 witnesses came to police and reported that Kyler had told them that he had murdered Kara, but charges still were not brought against him.
So now we're going to talk about Jessica Runyon's, because you can apparently choke women, kidnap women, physically assault women, threaten to murder women. You can stalk women. You can abuse animals and kill animals in front of these women. You get probation, but you sell drugs, man, you're going to jail.
Mm-hmm. That's where they draw the line.
Jessica Runyon's was born on July 10th, 1995 to Jamie and John. She was described by her family as a generous, loyal young woman who loved music, dancing, and baking. She was a beautiful girl who especially loved her family. Jessica and her little sister Megan had an especially close relationship, and Megan looked up to her. She was fun-loving, she was outgoing, she was someone who her friends could always count on. And Jessica had a big heart, and she loved working as a cook and server at a nearby retirement home. So at this time, she's 21 years old, and she enjoyed going out with her friends in her hometown of Raymore, Missouri, which is just a few miles south of Belton, where Cara had lived. On Thursday, September 8th, 2016, Jessica attended a party at a friend's house in Grandview, and she was seen leaving the party around 11 p.m. in her black Chevy Equinox. Her friend had been with her that night, and witnesses remembered that he seemed really jealous of Jessica talking to other friends. This friend had to have all of her attention, apparently.
Apparently.
Despite the perceived problems between the two, Jessica left the party with her friend. This friend just so happened to have been released from prison 6 days earlier.
Who was it?
6 days earlier, and his name was Kyler Yost. 6 days, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
He's out of prison.
He couldn't make it a full week without murdering someone else.
Yeah.
On Friday, September 9th, after discovering that no one had seen or talked to Jessica since she left the party, Jamie Runyons contacted police to report her daughter missing. Police began interviewing those who had seen her at the party, as well as people who lived near the duplex where the party had taken place, but no one had seen Jessica. Early Saturday morning, police discovered Jessica's black Chevy. You said Equinox. I call it an Equinox.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go with Equinox.
Okay.
They had discovered her black Chevy Equinox on the side of the road in an isolated area. The vehicle had been badly burned. And the thing is, because, you know, doing the research on this, not knowing, I knew that Jessica had disappeared. I knew that. I was like, oh my God, he burned her in that car. She wasn't in there. She wasn't anywhere nearby.
Nope.
Later that night, Kyler was pulled over by police. His half-brother, Jessup Carter, was driving and his wife was in the passenger seat. So Kyler's in the back seat. The police later said that Kyler seemed very anxious during the traffic stop. Carter's wife had a gun on her, which was confiscated by the police. And after that, the officer just let him go.
Yeah.
So they continued driving a few hours south to Carter's hometown and they dropped Kyler off. And I heard that he was dropped off at a trailer somewhere in the area.
But also, the reason that the police officer thought that he seemed anxious was because he straight pissed his pants when they got pulled over. Like, he physically wet himself because he was so scared. I'd say
that's pretty anxious, yeah.
And then they just keep Did he have an extra change of clothes?
I don't know.
I mean, like, you know, I have
piss pants.
Exactly. Like, I've got kids. I keep some extra undies and stuff in the car. I pull up from a younger one. I don't know that Kyler keeps pull up in the car for himself. So
I wouldn't think so.
I don't, it's just like, they just keep driving for hours. I'm like, dude, you pissed yourself though. Like, yeah. I don't know. But anyway, that's why they think he seems anxious.
I'd say it's a pretty good sign. Mm-hmm. Pretty good indicator.
But they bring it up at his trial about 51 times. Remember how you pissed yourself? Did you piss yourself? Remember when you pissed yourself? Do you remember that you pissed yourself? He's like, you've made it abundantly clear. The jury remembers. <You're so mad. laughs>
Well, I've seen a movie one time that said, you're not cool unless you pee your pants. So
true.
Billy Madison, anyone? No. Miles Davis of cool. Piss your pants. So on September 11th, just to be clear, Kyler Yost, not cool. Not Miles Davis. No. On September 11th, Carter called law enforcement and told them that his stepbrother, Kyler, had confessed to murdering Jessica Runyons and dragging her body into the woods. Carter reported that he was with Kyler when he burned Jessica's car, and then he'd taken Kyler to his home to heal from the burns he had on his face and hands.
Yeah, so they set this car on fire together. Kyler burns himself.
Mm-hmm.
His hands, his face, his hair.
And he's got scratches on his face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On September 11th, 2016, at 9:36 a.m., law enforcement served a search warrant at Carter's home where they found Yost and took him into custody. He was found with those burns on his hands, face, and arms, and with the scratches on his face, so they document this. He was arrested for the burning of Jessica's vehicle, but not yet for murder. The judge set his bond at a very high amount so that he would not be able to get out on bail. And of course, there is a media presence there when he's either, I don't know, I guess being arraigned or he's just gone to court or like whatever. And the reporter is like, hey, Kyler, what happened to your face? And Kyler's like, what happened to your face?
I'm rubber and you're glue, whatever.
Oh like, my gosh. And he's like, did you kill Jessica? And he's like, did you kill Jessica? It's like,
what a little brat, man.
He basically was like, up your butt and around the corner.
Exactly. Taco Bell, can I take your order?
Like,
this is like the shadow game. Like,
yeah. Yeah, because the reporter is like, you know, what happened to your face is what happened to your face. And he's like, well, did you get burned? And he just like sits there and then he's like, did you kill Jessica? Did you? Like, okay. Total burn, man. Like,
yeah.
Bazinga, good one. Whatever.
A burn as good as your face. Exactly. It's, yeah.
Grow up.
What a exactly. Like, what a freaking baby.
What happened to your face? My God. On April 3rd, 2017, a mushroom hunter called police to inform that he discovered what looked to be human remains in a wooded area.
So I didn't know that there was such a thing. I think we've talked about this before. A mushroom hunter.
Well, isn't that who found Holly Bobo's body?
Yes.
They were hunting mushrooms.
I was like, I know that this is a thing, but hearing it like, oh, a mushroom hunter. Mm-hmm. I'm like envisioning the guy from the original Jumanji with like
the helmet
and he's like out the hunting mushrooms.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I don't know. That's what comes to mind there.
That's funny. So the next day they find a second set of remains nearby. So we've got a
place.
Thank
God for mushroom hunters. They are unsung heroes.
That's what I'm saying. One set of remains was clearly much older than the other. Just 2 days after the remains were found, the Kansas City Crime Lab identified the first set as the remains of Jessica Runyon's. And in an interview, Jamie expressed relief that her daughter had finally been found, but she said it's not over. She's like, it's not a resolution unless we find Kara too. We're a team and it's still not finished for me. And Jamie and Kara's mother, Rhonda, had formed just a very, very tight bond. I mean, and it's very clear from the onset that their cases are connected too. They're both last seen with Kyler.
Uh-huh, 100%, yeah. It's just sad to me that I'm so glad that they had each other to lean on in this situation, but it's one of those things where it's like the reason why they bonded so much. It's so sad.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. Finally, in August of 2017, that second set of remains was identified by the FBI crime lab, and they did belong to Kara Kapetsky. So on October 5th, 2017, Kyler Uist is finally charged with the first-degree murders of Kara and Jessica.
Hey, y'all. Did you know that we release an update all about us and what we're up to each week on our Patreon? It's called Tea to the Fourth Power Y, which is some time to talk to you, a nod to Not Another Teen Movie. Mm-hmm. And it's where we just gal pal with you about life, what we're watching, our love for Cracker Barrel Italian dressing. I mean, honestly, the sky's the limit.
You never know what you're going to get, really. Mm-hmm. If you want to catch an episode without being a patron, you are in luck. Just head over to killerqueens.link/TTTTY, okay, time to talk to you, 4 T's and a Y, and you'll get to hear a full episode for free. And you can get every single regular release episode ad-free for as little as $3 a month. That's less than half the price of the coffee I get at Starbucks, so.
I know, that's crazy.
I know, what a deal.
Mm-hmm. And for $10 a month, you get all that plus our other two Patreon-exclusive shows, Murder Mixtapes, which is a full bonus case each week. Recent cases are Tara Grinstead, Hannah Cornelius, and New York Body Snatchers, just to name a few.
And you also get our other Patreon-exclusive show, Doc Jams, which is where we cover true crime documentaries episode by episode. We've done Don't Fuck with Cats. We've done Crime Scene on Netflix. They have Cecil Hotel and Times Square Killer. We've done The Jinx. We've done so many more. So be sure to head to killerqueens.link/TTTY to get your free episode and hundreds more episodes to download right now and binge when you become a member of our Patreon community.
So I think it's obvious to all of us that Kyler Uist is, again, a disgusting piece of trashes. He's a slime ball. He's a douchebag. He's He's a disgust. He's a yucky McGucky, you know? Mm-hmm. But he was able to get the best public defenders. His stepbrother, Jessup Carter, was supposed to be a key witness, but he was found dead in his jail cell where he was actually being held on arson charges. So this gave the defense the opportunity to blame the murders on Carter since he was no longer there to defend himself.
What a piece of garbage. Like, he's like, oh, my brother's not here anymore. I'll blame the whole thing on him.
Mm-hmm.
And Jessup was not arrested on arson charges because of the vehicle. He set a house on fire.
Yes, he sure did. So, I mean, he had some issues as well, but it's not fair to be like, it was that guy.
That guy did it, yeah. And you guys, you're not ready for what he blames on his brother.
The prosecution called several witnesses to testify, including one of his ex-girlfriends who previously told police that Kyler had confessed to her that he'd murdered Kara. And she spoke of his violence and the abuse she suffered while they were dating. She testified that one day when she was packing to leave him, he attacked her and strangled her and said, quote, I have killed ex-girlfriends before out of sheer jealousy. I will kill you before you can let another scream out of your throat. And the way she said it when she was on the stand, it was powerful. She was convicted. She was brave to get mm-hmm. up there and say it because he's sitting right there.
Yep. And that's terrifying.
Mm-hmm. The prosecution talked about Kyler's childhood and how he grew up living with his grandparents and his stepbrother, Jessup. And he had an extremely strained relationship with both parents, but particularly with his mother. They even played a recording from a jailhouse phone call between Kyler and his mom, where she begged him to tell her where Kara's body was. And Kyler explained that he was just, quote, playing into her narrative because he wanted to do whatever he could to hurt his mother, not because he actually killed anybody.
So he is going to essentially admit that he'd killed somebody, but that he won't tell her where the body is on a recorded line in jail just to fuck with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As a goof.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Bold move. Another witness brought forward was a local man named Ryan Talley. He said that on the day that Kara had disappeared, he'd seen Kyler's truck traveling south around noon on the highway that connected to the area where the body was later found. And Talley recognized Kyler's truck from a friend's house and was surprised because he'd never seen him driving in that area before. So this is out of character for him. And it just so happens to be coincidentally right in the area where the body was found.
Right.
Jessica's ex-boyfriend, Jackson, took the stand to talk about their relationship, or her relationship with Kyler, excuse me. Jackson said that after he and Jessica moved in together, they began to have trouble in their relationship, so they started sleeping in separate bedrooms. At the time of her disappearance, it was believed that Jessica was dating Kyler, and he had become incredibly jealous about her continued on and off relationship with Jackson. And, you know, she's still living with him at this point. So this is very likely a motive for murder.
Yeah. I think Kyler's middle name is, he's Kyler. If I can't have you, nobody can. Used.
Kyler, I'm jealous of everyone. And I'm incredibly controlling and possessive. Shitbag. Used.
Mm-hmm. Kyler, my germs. Used. Like.
Yes, exactly. Mine. And when did they? I'm guessing because Jessica went missing 6 days after Kyler had gotten out of prison. Did they date when he was in prison? Like, this seems like if they didn't, this is a fairly fresh relationship, and he's already this jealous right. and possessive.
And
of her.
You know, he's super jealous of Kara when they're not together anymore. I think that, you know, maybe Jessica was having, this is pure speculation, Jessica was having issues with her boyfriend. She was friends with Kyler. He was into her, and maybe she showed some interest, but was not ready to move on from her ex-boyfriend, and he can't handle that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not saying that there needs to be a prolonged amount of time that somebody is with somebody for them to become that jealous or anything, because there's no excuse for that kind of jealousy and possessive. You know,
but it is, but I'm just saying, like, it is,
yeah. I mean, as far as it seems to me, he's out of jail for 6 days and he's already...
He's so possessive of her.
Coming in so hot. Yes.
Yeah.
On the last day of the trial, Kyler took the stand in his own defense. He denied both murders and he blamed his stepbrother. And the prosecution said to him, this is so good. I love it so much. She said, quote, "You must be the most unlucky guy in the world. You've had two girlfriends go missing, and the last person they were seen with is you. That's pretty unlucky, isn't it?" And Kyler's on the stand, and he said, "I think that's extremely unlucky, but anyone who has a brother that's a serial killer, I would say, is very unlucky."
Okay. So your brother's a serial killer, but he only kills your ex-girlfriends.
Right. It's nothing to laugh about, but like, seriously, like, it's a laughable defense, because are you kidding me right now? Like, you're the common denominator, and you are the one who has been seen with them.
Yeah.
Jessup Carter wasn't anywhere near them. Mm-mm. Yes, he was there when they burned Jessica's car, but...
which he reported to the police.
What? Yes, exactly.
And yeah, there, Jessup Carter had some of his own issues and demons and whatever, but what a horrible thing to do to your own flesh and blood. Mm-hmm. He's gone. I'll blame it on him. And actually, his response when he found out that Jessup was dead was, "I don't fucking care." And the prosecution brought that up in the trial. And he was like, "I didn't use those exact words, but yeah, I thought he had a lot more coming to him than taking the easy way out since he'd killed so many people." I mean, just throwing his name right under the bus. That's your brother,
bullshit,
dude.
Man. Yeah. I mean, clearly he doesn't give a shit about anybody except for himself, which mm-hmm. is not surprising or shocking, but it's just kind of like, wow, you really have no redeeming qualities, dude.
No, not even one.
As the jury deliberated, there were still a lot of questions surrounding both cases. Most frustrating, though, was that people couldn't understand why Kyler wasn't charged with Kara's murder in the years before Jessica's murder. Many witnesses came forward. I mean, we talked about at least seven. It came forward to police to tell them that Kyler confessed to them, and it seemed as though there were plenty of information that connected Kyler to Kara's death. But unfortunately, it would have been very difficult to bring murder charges against Kyler without a body or really any other physical evidence for that matter. Additionally, while there were many people who relayed information about Kyler to police, the information came at different times from different people and was never able to be confirmed. Now, I know some of it, like, oh, he told me this. That's hearsay, right? I mean, it's like, you don't really know, but their track record for confirming things, not the best. So,
and it seems like he definitely visited the spot again where he dumped their
bodies. He took Jessica. Yeah. He visited the spot where he dumped Kara, but I'm sure he did it after he dumped both bodies. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, can we not get somebody
to follow it, like tail him or something, you know? Like, again, it seemed as though investigators wanted and needed concrete evidence before charging Kyler. But despite all of this, the community felt as though Jessica's murder did not have to happen. And I completely 100% agree. Kara's murder didn't have to happen. If they had actually taken the abuse seriously, Maybe something else could have happened. Maybe we would have had a different outcome. I don't think, I don't know. I wish it could be like, again, like Minority Report, where you could be like, this guy's going to do something and we need to put him in jail, but you can't. That's not the way the world works, but it's frustrating because the signs were there.
But again, he's got a history of that pattern of behavior where he is continually assaulting women.
Multiple, every girlfriend he's ever been with.
Mm-hmm. And they report this and they say, sorry that happened to you.
And like you said, I mean, they're like, well, again, and this is me like speculating and kind of being not overly dramatic, but you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, but did you die though? Okay. Oh, but he had drugs? He sold drugs?
That's so frustrating. It's like these women have marks on them. Every bit of physical evidence corroborates their stories. And multiple people coming out and saying the same thing that have no connection to each other than they've all dated him. Mm-hmm. And the stories are the same. He's choking them.
Yeah.
He's following them. He's restraining them in some way. You know, like all these things. He's never once arrested for any of that violent behavior. And it does continue to escalate.
Right. And I can imagine that if you were in the situation or in one of his ex-girlfriend's positions, it would feel like keeping drugs off the street is more important than my life.
100%.
Mm.
100%.
I mean, of course, like like we've talked about, till we're blue in the face, basically, but like nobody could understand why the Belton police hadn't done something as simple as to confirm Kyler Yust's alibi. Maybe if they had done this, they'd be able to, you know, probe further into Kyler's actual whereabouts and connected him to Kara's murder before Jessica was murdered. This is years before. The jury deliberated for about 15 hours and found Kyler Yust guilty of voluntary manslaughter in the death of Kara and second degree murder in the death of Jessica. The judge sentenced him to life in prison plus 15 years. And unfortunately, in Missouri, the cap for a life sentence is 30 years, which meant Kyler Yust's sentence would run for 45 years at most. And he is currently serving his sentence at the Maximum Security Western Missouri Correctional Center in Cameron, Missouri.
What also really can, I mean, it doesn't seem like, because all these other girlfriends that he's threatened and attacked and everything, he has said this before Jessica has been killed. He says, I've killed ex-girlfriends out of sheer jealousy. But I mean, I would think if there are other disappearances linked to him,
they would talk about it, right?
Yeah. But so I don't know if he's just trying to brag or...
Right. I would think if even if they couldn't give details about this kind of stuff, it would at least be, you know, like he's suspected in the disappearance of so-and-so or whoever, which
right.
I hope to God he was just bragging, because two is bad, two is awful. But if there's more, that's it's awful too. Like, I don't...
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and the thing is, maybe he was saying, I've killed girlfriends in the past, but he's like, if he hadn't been stopped when he was, there would be countless more.
Yeah. I mean, it's like when we talked about Action Park, you know, like,
oh, sure.
You shouldn't have one person die in a wave pool. You damn sure shouldn't have two.
Mm-mm.
There should never be a second one, for sure. But like, he just continued to exhibit this pattern of absolutely violent behavior. And he told everybody about it.
He told everybody. It's just amazing to me, because there are some cases where we're like, man, if somebody would just tell one thing, it would break the case wide open. This guy's going around town for 10 years yep. being like, I did it.
And this is not a situation which, you know, as you're doing the investigation, you don't necessarily know this right away, but this is not a situation where this is some random serial killer who was like transient in and out of town, blew into town one day, killed this girl and left or whatever. You've got somebody who has a direct connection to her.
Mm-hmm.
And took out a restraining order against him 3 days before she disappears.
Yeah.
You got something to go on, y'all. You got something to go on. Yeah.
Yes.
It's frustrating.
It is very frustrating. I mean, of course, we always love to hear what you guys think about the cases that we cover. So if you have any thoughts or anything to add, anything like that, please let us know. We have a Facebook. We have an Instagram account. It's KQ True Crime.
Mm-hmm.
So find us there.
Yeah, Facebook discussion groups. You can find us there. Yeah.
Killer Queens podcast discussion group. So
yeah,
find us there. But thank you so much for, if you're watching, if you're listening, and we love you and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation. Thanks for listening, and we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud. Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.